Hi, this is Jack Healy of the Human Rights Action Center. Today I want to talk about in this podcast, the right to resist. Take me a little while to get there to explain it, but I'll get there. In about 1999, I was asked to go to Haiti to evaluate the justice system that was being done by the U.S. government. Normally I'm very distant from any kind of request like this, but it was a time when I could use a few coins, and so I signed up to do it, primarily because it was going to deal with the Center for Victims of Torture, particularly rape. And so I wanted to do that and went down to Haiti and found, you know, the great people of Haiti, tremendous people with art and wonderful minds and prose, and were the first people to defeat slavery long before the United States did. So I was happy to be there. I'd done work, development work there for years before, many years before. Had been there a number of times. It's a deteriorating country, for sure. It needs an awful lot of work. But I was pleased to be there. Really what we ran into when I got there, we visited the embassy as usual and sort of get your marching orders, you know, which you don't want really. But I said, well, they asked me, what's the first thing you want to do? And I said, visit the prisons. Why would you want to visit the prisons? They said, I said, that's where the prisoners are. That's where the criminals are. You know, that's where the innocent are. So they said, okay, finally. It took a while back and forth that we got there. So I visited the men's prison, discovered that a lot of men were there because the judge never showed up, or there wasn't a judge to make a decision to let them out, but they'd already served their time and already serving a lot more time. And then the others, who could pay some money, could pay somebody in that prison system to get them out. And so it was a fraudulent kind of prison and conflicted in many ways. So I went over to the other prisons that were there, the boys' prison and the girls' prison. The boys' prison had about 160 young boys in them, and it was one bed, and for all of them. And I checked on the medical supplies in the medical unit, and there was one bottle half filled with aspirin. That was about it. There was literally nothing else in that boys' prison for their help, medical help. Go over to the girls' prison, not too far away. It's really kind of interesting because when you enter the girls' prison, now don't forget these are all children, teenagers primarily. When you enter, on your left side were the poorest of the poor at the door on the left. As you went in and you went around the room, as they sat against the walls, like a rectangle, as you went around that room, and they were all standing against the wall, which whoever ran the prison told them to do that, their economic status would grow, and their clothes would change as you went from one to another, so that when you came to the end to go back out the door, the richest girls were at that corner. They were dressed that way. Went all the way around economically. They showed how poor or rich or middle class they were. It's kind of an amazing feat for me. I was amazed by it. Both prisons, I discovered, were unconstitutional as well. We're not supposed to do that. So I got to the issue of the important thing that was on the minds of the NGO, the non-government agency there, was the rape issue. You know, in Haiti, it's hard to get the good protection. A lot of it's just plastic walls. You know, a lot of it's thin boards and, you know, things thrown together for housing. And many of the rapes occur that way. They can get in and out easily without anybody seeing them or surprising people. It was pretty brutal. And so I start meeting with the women's group, the lawyers in the country, women's organization. I think there was one that had them all in it. They were magnificent. They were really powerful, mighty, strong, clear-headed. Some of the best lawyers I ever met in my life were there. They were tremendous and well well-educated and ready to go. And so what we did was talk about how we could move from, you know, the accountability issue. If the woman could identify the man, how to prove that case, and how to take them to court and sue them and stop this constant raping that was going on at the time. And so that's what we examined. We spent most of our time on that. It was like it was just case after case that was like this. That just, and so the accountability factor runs into the nature of how Haiti is run culturally. It is it's by day it's Christian, very Christian. At night there's a lot of voodoo. And I don't mean it like it's an accusation. It's actually a powerful strength in the country. And it has voodoo power, where accountability is very hard to come by. And that's part of the issue of voodoo. And so things happen there that accountability goes out the window around voodoo. And that's to the culture, a sense of inability and a right to resist. So that's where I start first running into this right to resist was pretty important. And I start thinking about this as a theme. I worry about this theme because the right to resist for people who are being oppressed, governments often hate that right. They don't talk about it. For instance, in many movies about American Indians, you never see the right to resist. Clearly between the invading colonial forces and the American Indians in front of them. That right to resist is seldomly spelled out. They tell other kinds of stories, but not that one. For instance, today in the Museum of Indian, for American Indians in Washington, D.C., you go there, you leave there with no impression because you can't find the right to resist. You don't run into Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse in Cincinnati and Seattle and Chief Joseph. You don't run into the great fights of those days. You run into cloth and where the Indians came from and that sort of thing. But if you go to the Holocaust Museum, you come out weeping. If you go to the Black American Museum, you come out weeping. Now, to come out of the American Indian, you have no reaction, just none. And so this right to resist is really something. And it's always, I think we're facing that now in our country with women who have been raped by these superpower, rich power men. And we're essentially facing the same issue as the right to resist. And so we start establishing that right to resist. So at the end of this visit, which was about 2 weeks long, and I had gone through the prisons and met all the key people, and one of my friends worked there. And so finally we got down to the embassy, who wanted my final evaluation of what I thought of the victims for human rights and how it was going as an NGO, which was now run by a gentleman, Hervé Rastafani, from the great country of Madagascar, was doing a fabulous job, really good job. And so I highly recommended it. It kind of shocked everybody in the room. I said, I give this very, very high mark. We're hunting for accountability, the rapist, and we're going to pursue that. And that's the course we're looking at. So within about, I'd say 6 months, after I left and having recommended it, the U.S. government shut it down. And so this moral of this podcast is we have to recognize the right to resist an oppression, whether it's a woman against a forceful, idiotic man, or a country where, you know, in Kashmir, in Palestine, all these places, the Rohingya in Burma, all these places that are trying to exist as people, a lot of them stateless, they got the right to resist. And that has to be dealt with over and over again. Otherwise, we're allowing a situation to occur where you just have to accept abuse. You have no accountability. This is Jack Healy for the Human Rights Action Center. Thank you.